All right, let's get going. Setting things up with our usual. Last time we were mostly, last semester we were mostly talking about the importance of biblical fellowship and why we need it and the different types of relationships that are part of biblical fellowship. This semester it's all about how to pursue it. Just so you know, Aaron wants to talk about how to do something with it beyond what we're doing here. So we're hopefully going to be talking soon. And if any of you guys have ideas as to what to do, I'd totally take them so that I could talk to him about them and head in that direction. Now, last time we got some awesome answers to the question, what makes biblical fellowship different than normal or secular relationships? But the main one that we're going to focus on today is that it's all about our relationship in Christ. And that's really what's binding us together. And so in order for us to really be deep and close with one another's, we have to have this foundation, and then we can really exhort one another. And the other thing that we know is that if we're not deep and close, it's hard for other people to really spur us on and encourage us. And if we don't get to know others, it's going to be hard for us to help them. And so biblical fellowship has this great thing in that it helps us cover our blind spots really well. And so once we are, our blind spots are covered, typically what we see is that sanctification moves faster. We're growing in godliness, which is really, really cool. We're getting encouraged. We're getting help. We're being a great witness. Now, last time we talked about the different forms of help, and we came up with like a little list of all the different forms of help. This week, what I thought we'd do is hone in on two, and the two that are probably the ones that most people have questions over, and we're going to start there. So what we want to do is we want to look at the when to share advice versus when to listen. And so if you guys can break up into groups of three, splitting up family members, twins, couples, all that, and get into groups of three, ask in your triad, how do you decide when to do one? And when, like, what gives you cues that you should switch? And if you guys can discuss that, that would be awesome. All righty. Let's see what you guys came up with before we start diving in a little bit more. When it comes to listening versus sharing advice, how do you decide which one to do? What did you guys come up with? Yes? Yeah, so more likely to give advice when you know the person really well and you have a higher level of relationship. Awesome. Or if somebody asks for it. Great.
Kids get advice, the wife gets to listen.
Yeah, that's right. There we go. That's right. Kids get advice, wife gets to listen. That's the winner right there. And if we mix that up, it is a problem. So what else do we see? When do we give advice? When do we listen? Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so when there's a lot of genuine, and not ask questions. Yeah, so when there's a lot of genuine emotion, usually on the side of it's really genuine, especially if it's in higher intensity and it's real, real, just listen, just empathize. Not a time to give advice then. Let them be connected. Yes. Awesome. So sometimes a person will give you the clues and they'll say, yeah, I'm really wanting advice or something along that line. And if you're discerning they're really real about it, then go ahead and give it. Versus if they're looking to be understood or saying something along that line, then that's a great time to listen. Awesome. Yes, sir. Yeah. That's it. So if there's a lot stirring up in somebody, sometimes they just need to get it out. And so it's great to just listen, let them get it out, and then later go for the advice. Now, for the second question, if you switch, so there was a time where you were listening and then you started giving advice, or there was a time where you were giving advice and then you stopped and you started to listen, what were some of the clues that told you that you needed to make that switch? Guess. Yeah. So if the other person's kind of frustrated with what you're doing, it's time to change it up. It's a good sign. What else do we see? Yes. Yeah. Awesome. So once you see that they kind of took a breath and you kind of sense that I got everything out, great time to switch, especially to more towards advice. That's awesome. Any other thoughts? Yes. Yeah, shut up is usually a really good sign that you shouldn't be continuing. That's a pretty good one. And so we want to make sure we don't do that. Yes.
At our table, it was mentioned that sometimes you can start to go in the direction of advice without giving it its footprint.
Yeah.
You're just asking leading questions, which are both you trying to understand and you trying to help them focus.
Yeah, so sometimes we can give advice by asking questions, especially leading questions. And sometimes somebody can receive that. Sometimes somebody may not be ready for that. And so we have to depend on that because that's still advice giving. Anything else? Good stuff. Let's keep going. The number one thing that we want you to think about in order to know when to make the switch is you want to make sure you're connected before you give advice. So the thing that could be very frustrating for some of us in the room is we might have the exact right thing that person needs to hear, like the exact answer. But unless they feel connected to you, the chances of them really hearing it and applying it is way down. Because oftentimes they'll misinterpret the advice giving really quickly in a negative way. So it could be that they are feeling like, oh, you think you're smarter than me, or you don't have these, oh, this is so simple for you. Like, you know, the negative self-talk can sometimes creep up. So one of the things that we talk about is we need to look for the connection, because oftentimes the weaker the connection is, the harder it is going to be for you to be able to get your point across. They just won't hear you. Connection's key. So oftentimes that breath that was talked about in the back table is a sign like, I feel relieved. And usually at that point, they're really connected to you. Sometimes if after they've said a bunch of things and they say, what do you think about what I'm saying? And you're sensing they're open, ready to hear. That's another good sign. Things like that are good, but we're going to go through more. So we want to give you a few different examples of what connection or non-connection looks like. And we want you to tell us what you think about these. And I absolutely love these faces. So whenever Megan does it, it always makes me smile. And so whenever I'm reviewing these, I tend to go, I like the faces. And so we're using our faces again. So let's say somebody says that we got two people in the room, you're observing them. And one says, I feel so down today. And the other one says, have you tried praying about it? On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being terrible, 10 being fantastic, how would you rate the connection between these two friends and why? Who said it?
One.
Why?
He didn't care why he was
there. Yeah. And what would that do to the other person? Or how does that influence?
Alone.
Yeah. Feel alone and isolated, disconnected. Any other thoughts on this? Yep. Yeah, there we go. And I swear I didn't prep my son for that one. I swear.
You must not be on God's team.
That's right. You're in the spiritual dunce class, right? I mean, it's like that's where they start to feel like they're being moved towards if you say something like that. That's exactly it. So oftentimes when we give advice too fast, one of the key messages that's actually heard by the other person is, I don't want to deal with you. Instant disconnection. And then the chances, well, actually, let me say that. If that continued to happen in this relationship, what do you sense if this pattern kept happening in this relationship? What would happen to that relationship? So somebody keeps just giving advice right away, not connecting first. What's going to happen to that relationship? Yep. Yeah, so it's not going to grow because it feels like the person doesn't really want to get to know you. What other thoughts we have? Where's this relationship going? Yes? Oh, yeah, that's what I do. Yeah, it's like, last time I talked to you about this, this is going to, you know, it's like, it's kind of like we just kind of tend to tune it out. Were you going to say something?
It seems like it would go to acquaintance at best and completely go out of work.
Yeah, hi, bye, acquaintance, casual things, but definitely not something you, not someone you lean on. Definitely not, because you know you're not going to be met, right? So let's take this another level. Let's try this again. Man, I'm feeling down, so down today. Oops. Man, I'm so sorry. What's going on? I've just been so busy at work and with the kids, I feel like I barely have any time for myself these days. I feel you. Sometimes you need to just unplug completely. Have you ever tried taking an hour to yourself? Scale of 1 to 10, 1 being terrible, 10 being fantastic. Where are we now? 5. Say why?
Well, the first response is like, he seems to understand, you know, asking me what's going on. You know, like they try to connect with him. And then he takes the advice so quickly.
Yeah, so a good attempt, but boy, that advice was right there. What else do we see? Yes? Take an hour. Yeah, so a cookie-cutter solution. Everybody just needs an hour. And if we just had an hour, all the problems are solved, right? So that doesn't work either because we didn't really hear. Anything else? Want to say more? Yep.
I was just going to say, it was nice that the second person got sad with it.
Yep. At least there was some empathy.
There was a connection.
There was something there. It was a start of something. Yep. Yeah, right. Now, let's say this pattern keeps happening over and over and over again. What happens to this relationship? Yep. Yeah. That's it. Right? So notice, without the connection, usually the trust gets really impacted. And so eventually what's going to happen is that person will get siloed into a certain type of relationship, and it usually stays right there. It's more because the person sharing is just sick of risking. And if I'm going to risk, if I'm going to put it out there, I'm not going to be met. Yeah, you go in this category because I don't want to get hurt. And so that's typically just what happens at a heart level. Anything else with this? Now think of something for just a second. Let's say with pattern 1 and 2, the first two that we did, how long does it take for somebody, if this was a pattern in a relationship, how long would it take to clean that pattern up and get things in a positive direction if this is happening over and over and over again? The first and the second one. So let's say this has happened. What does it take to bring the relationship back? So,
some people
that's it. It's going to vary tremendously. So for some people, they just don't ever risk again. Over. They're siloed. They're in that box. Never again. For somebody else, you now have to work through the lack of trust. You now have to work through the lack of connection. You have now a more bigger mountain to climb to get that relationship tight. So now let's look at a third attempt. I feel so down today. Man, sorry, what's going on? I just have been so busy at work and with the kids, and I feel like I barely have any time for myself these days. Ugh, I hate when that happens to me too. What's going on at work and with the kids? What's not going on at work and with the kids? Ha! Well, we just got a new project at work, and my manager left, so I'm filling in his role, and the kids are fine, just in the thick of school, so I'm like their chauffeur. Wow, sounds like you're doing four roles at once. Your job, your manager's job, a parent's job, and the job of full-time chaperone. Yup. Sounds like you're not getting enough alone time. Am I off? Sharer nods. What happens to you when you don't get enough alone time? I just feel terrible and sluggish. I daydream all the time about getting back to my hobbies, especially working out. I haven't been to the gym in ages. Wow, that stinks. Cutting out hobbies for work just sucks. What makes the gym specifically so important to you? I love everything about the gym, but especially running on the treadmill. I turn on some music and get praying. I feel so close to God when I run. That's awesome. Would you say your spiritual life is taking a hit too because you lost that prayer time? Man, for sure. That's honestly a lot of why I probably feel so terrible. Sounds like you need to find a new way to connect to the Lord. What other options can you consider? I feel pretty stuck. I'm not really sure. Long pause. I have some ideas. Would you like to hear them? Yeah, please do. I'm starting to feel a bit hopeless. Have you considered listening to sermons, praying, or singing hymns while being your kid's chauffeur? Now, on a scale of 1 to 10, where are we? We're at 12. I love that. What makes this a 12? What made it a 12? So there was a strong connection and there was a question, an ask. Can I do this? What else did you notice? Yes. Yeah. 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 So there wasn't a component of Christ being brought in the second example. Will you just say something, sir? Oh, no, you weren't. Yep. Sorry.
The second person do a lot of paraphrasing.
Yeah.
And then also follow through.
Yeah. That's it. So we see that there's real listening to understand going on here, right? And there's a way in which this person's entombed. What did you notice happen when he paraphrased the questions? When he said, I'm hearing this, and he formed a question out of it. What happened next?
It happened.
Notice they go deeper and deeper and deeper to actually move towards what you were going to say? And a real solution that meets them right where they are, right? So notice the person isn't necessarily doing much except for reframing what they're hearing and then getting curious and asking a question about it. And that typically starts to pull it deeper. And then eventually the person starts feeling hope, they get clarity. And if this pattern happened in this relationship over and over and over again, what would happen to this relationship? If these two kept doing this for each other? What would happen to this relationship? They would be close. Yeah, deep and close, which is that fourth stage of relationship that we're talking about on how to get there. So if you notice, you don't need a counseling degree. You don't need a coaching degree. What you really need is the ability to want to listen, empathize, connect, and then get curious, ask some questions, and then just follow some basic things. Now, one thing that sometimes people wonder about is, if I'm connecting to someone, does that automatically mean that I'm agreeing with them? Since it's up there, let me just keep going. Because I was about to say, what do you guys say? The reality is that's absolutely not true. Just because I'm seeing how you see it doesn't mean that I agree with you. So if somebody comes into this room right now, stands here, points outside, and says, the sky is green with pink polka dots. And they start freaking out. And a few of us start looking and say, it's kind of dark out there. I don't know that I see green and pink polka dots, right? We could do one of two things. We could try to correct it, or we can connect and see what's really happening. And the idea is that we're going to try to connect, not to agree, but to show them they're no longer alone in it. And then just see what happens. So maybe that person was being really abstract. Pink and green polka dots mean something completely different than what we thought. Who knows? I'm making stuff up as we go along right now. So bear with me and join me. So anyway, so what we want to see is that it doesn't always agree. It doesn't mean that we always agree. So for example, I just got fired and I'm just so angry at my former boss, my coworkers, and at God. Oh, friend, that's awful. I'm so sorry. Tell me more. Any agreement? None. Yes?
Some. He agrees with the feeling.
The feeling.
Not with the statement.
That's it. And that's what we're doing. We're actually connecting to, especially the emotions, we're connecting to where somebody is so that they're not alone. But we're not agreeing necessarily to their reason for it. Instead, we're going to engage a process that we're going to keep building on in these weeks so that we can get good at this. Now, there's some of you ask, what are some red flags that tell you that the connection isn't strong? Like, how can we tell that the connection isn't as strong as it needs to be? So typically, when somebody uses closed body language, hands folded, legs folded, those kinds of things, not when it's cold. If it's cold, most people have their legs and arms and everything cold, closed. But typically, if somebody's kind of furrowed or an upset expression, all of these things in their body can sometimes give us that clue. Sometimes, if you start interrupting them a lot to give advice, not a good sign. Usually the person doesn't feel heard. They're not ready to really receive it. They just want to be heard first. They want to be connected to. If you're starting to hear things like, yeah, I don't know if that would work for me, or they start arguing and debating or things like that, usually not a good sign. So sometimes we jump the gun too fast. We presume a lot of details that we haven't heard. And then we start saying it to the person, like, oh, you should just have a quiet time every day, and then, you know, everything will be great. And they're like, spend an hour with God every day. Like, you know, like, and that's, like, not going to go over too well. Next one, sullen silences. So if you sense the withdrawal, almost like their eyes are getting glazed over, they don't want to be there anymore in front of you, not a good sign. But actually, extreme emotions can also do the same thing. They're very frustrated, if they're kind of very angry, and you could see that you're nowhere close to experiencing that with them, that's often a sign that they could be really disconnected too. Last one. Sometimes the red flag also will depend on how close you are, like Craig was saying. If you're closer to the person, sometimes you can get away with giving advice too fast or doing that kind of thing. But sometimes if it's somebody who's new or an acquaintance to you, if you do that too fast, they're going to relegate you in that box. And it's because you haven't built the trust yet. And so that's just something that we just want to watch out for. Now, what are green flags for high connection? Open body language, leaning forward, nodding, looking relieved, excited, their energy level picking up. So oftentimes when somebody, even somebody that's going through a hard time, if they start to express it, and then you notice that their energy level goes up, even if it feels like it's much more negative, that's actually a great sign because it means they're getting in contact with a real pain. Next thing, asking powerful questions like, what does X represent to you? Or what does that do to you? What do you feel there? Like, what's going on inside of you? Something that broadens it out to let the other person know I'm in it with you. Those things often really help. Empathizing and showing you understand their perspective. So you saw from the last example, they use the same emotive words back to show them that they were there. They actually rephrased and paraphrased and asked questions based on it. Checking you got the facts by repeating what you heard and adding the phrase, am I off? Am I missing something? What else? Like, I really want to get this. Something that just kind of shows them that you're in it. And then being prompted for your thoughts or advice. So oftentimes, after the connection is established, usually the person will turn and say to you, what do you see? Or what do you think? Or something like that. Once the connection's there, great time to give advice. If the connection isn't there, if you're not sensing you're there, and then they ask that question, not a good sign. Typically, that's a sign that they either are feeling embarrassed by what they're sharing, or they're wondering how you see them, or so it's usually becomes kind of insecure at that point. So you might want to say, hey, before I share advice, where are you right now with what you're sharing with me? Or you might say, here's what I'm experiencing from you right now, and just being able to make a connection statement before you give it so that they could see it. Make sense? Because I feel like I'm flawed. Now, for the rest of our time today, we're going to take, we're going to get back in triads. More people have entered the room, so the groups of four can go down to groups of three, because we need 7 minutes each for this one. There's going to be one person who shares. There's going to be two people who are going to listen. And here's what we're going to do. We want the sharer to come back to this question that we asked last week or the week before. Say a challenge they're going through. So depending on the level of trust that you feel, it could be something like, I feel really busy today. Or if it's stronger, you could say, I just feel really distant from God. And you can kind of go there with whatever level you got, you feel like you got. Listeners, this time your role is to increase the connection. So your dominant role is to increase the connection, not to give advice. Okay, so the first thing is you want to increase it. Then once you see the connection strong and there's an opportunity to give advice, then give it. So think in terms of first connect, then advice. And then if the person who's sharing doesn't feel the connection and somebody's jumping in with advice, please say it out loud because we're practicing, right? So please say, let's just connect a little bit more. If the other listener is not sensing the connections there, hey, let's connect a little bit more. Do something like that. Just because when we say something like that, if you're the share and you kind of are able to say the connection's not there, that actually helps the share to not move in a negative direction. It helps the share to understand that this person's kind of working towards this, which is often really important. And one last thing, we know that when we do these exercises can feel a little stiff and a little intimidating, a little inorganic, but especially because we're opening up the floor for critiques. But the idea isn't to say, I'm good at this, I'm not good at this. The idea is to practice it because I genuinely believe that everybody in this room can get this. And so having worked with a ton of executives where the first time I meet with them, they literally say to me, so the number one goal for us is going to be empathy. And you need to know I don't have an empathetic bone in my body. And that's where we start. You know, and it's kind of like that's what happens so many times. It's over, it's not even funny. And it's crazy when you see them grow to that. Sometimes what you also want to do is you want to just learn from the experience. So what is a clue that you picked up in your triad that you could use outside of here that's going to help you do this better? So let's go back to the exercise. Let's break into our groups of three again. And 7 minutes each. And if you need to go to Jerry at, I think, 7:20, please start earlier so that you guys can go to Jerry. All righty. Those of you that have to go to a choir, feel free to. But for anybody, what questions do we have? What questions we have? Yes, sir.
I've got a question that's been lingering in my mind.
Yep.
So helpful to think about listening, empathy, curiosity. Picking up on signals from the person we're talking to. Can you tell us, like, in the back of your brain, as you're doing all this, what is the overall goal as we ask questions, as we're like, I think of it as like we're finding somebody in a maze, and we're talking to them over the hedges in the maze, trying to find out where they are.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And then once we find them, in some way, we want to help them get out of the maze.
Yeah, and not get trapped ourselves.
So how would you describe the maze exit overall strategy?
Yeah, that's a fantastic question. The number one thing that I'm trying to do when it's a client, a friend, my wife, my kids, the number one thing I'm trying to do is get to the essence of what's going on. So really get to the heart. And in order for me to get to the heart, usually it's going to be some principle that's going through their life, not just something very specific. So, for example, if somebody comes to me and they say something to the effect of, my wife and I, my husband and I aren't getting along, that's too broad, right? Tell me about that. And then I'm going to pick something random. Let's say they say, we spend money really differently and it's driving us nuts, right? And then they say, let's say they say to me, what we need is a good budget. Let's get a good budget. I would actually say, can we go a little deeper first, and then let's just see what we discover. And so when I ask each person, what does the other person's style of money, how does that impact you? Let's say one person's a spender, the other one's a hoarder. This other person who's spending sees the hoarder as a killjoy. There's just no fun. Everything is like, you know, penny pinching. I'm sick of penny pinching, right? So we're a little deeper, but we're not quite there yet. I probably at this point, just to help the two of them be at the same place, for the hoarder, what does the spending do? Oh my goodness, that throws me into chaos. That's like, what's really happening? Like, are we going to be able to, you know, let's say they start kind of going there. Then we try to bring it even deeper than that. What does a killjoy represent to you? What does the anxiety represent to you? And as...
What do you mean by that?
So let's say somebody who's feeling really anxious, I might say something like, what is that anxiety saying to you? What's ultimately going to happen? What do you fear is ultimately going to happen here? And let's say they say something really exaggerated. Well, I think we're going to be living under a bridge in Atlanta before long. You know, or something along that line, right? And that's usually where the other spouse wants to deck them with a 2x4, and you got to kind of split that up a little bit before that happens. And, you know, you got to put your boxing gloves on in the room there. But usually what I say is I'm hearing you say that as a joke, but you just finished saying that there's a lot of anxiety. Tell me about that. What do you fear? Usually then it gets real quiet. And then what you hear is usually some profound, deep thing. I fear we're not going to have enough money for our retirement, for this, that this person really doesn't care about our future, that they're so short-sighted, and it's going to cost us when we can't do anything about it. And so then I usually ask the other person to repeat back what they heard their spouse say to form a connection, and then do that in the reverse. So the goal of what we're trying to do is get to the essence and make sure the other hears that essence, whatever that is. And usually at that point, there's a lot of understanding. So the person who's the spender will say, whoa, I don't want to do that. And, you know, I don't get it, you know, or something like that. Like, whoa, that was deeper than I thought it was going to be. Now, on the other side, when the hoarder hears the killjoy, and what does that represent? And let's say the person says, I start feeling suffocated, like I can't live, like I'm just trapped. And usually when the other person's hearing that, it's like, whoa, wait a minute, I'm not after that. I'm actually trying to create a space to live. And then that brings it even deeper. So it looks like both of them, what they want to do is they want to live, but they have different definitions as to what that looks like. So oftentimes they join in a couple session. They just don't realize it's going to join. But you got to keep asking questions like, what does that represent? And so I'm trying to get to the absolute essence. What are they believing? What are they believing about whatever it is that's stirring whatever's going on for them? Once they expose it, typically they feel pretty relieved. Typically they feel like, whew, okay, it's out there.
Just to get
there. Yeah, and often what's crazy is a lot of change happens automatically and quickly after that. And they usually say that I'm the one that created the change, which is always funny to me, because I usually don't say much after that. It's like they've arrived, and then I usually see a question like, so what do you want to do with that? And then they say, oh, well, we got to do X, Y, Z, A, B, C, L, M, N, O, P. Oh, thanks, Ryan. That was awesome. And I'm like, yeah. You know, like they usually do it because they have the solution typically inside them. They just needed to know what that essence was. Once the essence is discovered, they usually come up with fantastic solutions, way better than I would come up for them because I'm not them.
That's very helpful.
Yeah. Awesome. What other questions we have? Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
How do we use those helpfully? It all seems like a gray area where sometimes it's helpful, sometimes I could, you know, not be too forward or too immediate. And other times maybe it's not.
Yeah. Yeah, so we didn't do this here. We actually went for the advice just to kind of show the advice piece. But typically before I ever give advice, I'm trying to ask open-ended neutral questions. So open-ended neutral. So an open-ended neutral question might be like, now that you've seen this, what do you want to do with it? or what is this stirring up for you, or something that's just going to broaden it out. And then if the person like is going through it and eventually they get stuck, and I do have an idea, that's when I'll ask, hey, I have a thought, can I share what I think, and feel free to push back and say that's not it for me. And usually what happens is I'll share it. Sometimes they say, oh my goodness, that's great, but sometimes they say, no, that's not it, but this is. So sometimes at that point, the advice or the suggestion reminds them of what it really is. And then typically I stop giving advice again, and now I'm trying to help them come up with their solution. Because it's always going to go, it's almost like 9 times out of 10, it's going to be way better than what I can come up with, in part because they're executing. I'm not executing. They know themselves way more. They know what works for them in a deeper way. So I try to give principles at best, but then fine-tuning plan is on them. And so trying to do the open-ended neutral first is usually helpful. When they're stuck, advice. And we're going to get into that. Help? Cool. Any other questions? Yes, sir. Oh, my goodness, yeah. You're talking about like half my day now. So, I mean, come on. No, I'm kidding. Typically, this is going to sound really bad, but let me just say it because you guys have probably experienced it in your world. Some people want to talk to me, and in my case, they're paying me, right? And they actually don't want to solve the problem. They want to be victims, right? And if they just want to be a victim, I'm not really the right guy for them. Because I actually get bored. Like, I don't have ADD, but it feels like all of a sudden I'm looking out my window every once in a while. It's like I start getting like, squirrel, right? It's like we're not really doing something in the room. And the worst thing is usually I feel like I'm enabling it. Like I'm going to make it worse. So usually that's when the tough love kind of comes in. But I try to stay tactful and then move it up from there. So if we look at Jesus, how he addressed the Pharisees when he was, 12, 13, however young he was, till all the way at the end with Matthew 23 going to brood of vipers, we see the staging that he kind of did to go from very tactful, very kind of in there to brood of vipers. And so I don't usually try to get to the brood of vipers phase ever. That's not a goal of mine. But sometimes, like, some of my clients actually like it when I push them. So sometimes the push, usually for them, it has to do with fear. The fear of executing, the fear of actually doing it, because they see the risk. And so usually I'm trying to connect to them way more than push them at that point. But then if it's kind of moving into victimhood, usually we have the talk, as one of my clients called it. And the talk is, how much is this really helping? Like, what are you really getting from our time together? And then when the person shares, not much, it's like, we want to talk about something else, or do we want to stop? Like, what do we want to do? Like, I usually try to do it in a tactful way, but still pushing them along towards, let's actually take action, or let's not do this, because there's no need to. And then also, for me, in my case, it's like the worst feeling in the world to be sitting in a room with someone that doesn't want to work for that long. It's like, oh man, somebody else could have had this slot, or 10 million other things could have been happening. So let's actually do it, because I'm ready to fight. My heart's open too. If I'm going to really get in there with you, I'm going to be wide open. Not necessarily sharing facts about my life, but I'm going to be open to connection. So I don't want my heart out there and then the other person's nowhere close to it. Let's do something. Make sense? Great. Yes?
I do not hear anything with people say over there.
Oh, sorry.
I feel totally disconnected.
It's thank you.
A way that you can just in one or two sentences say what they're trying to say,
yeah,
and then have an answer so I can put two together.
Sure, yes. So what he just said was, actually, phrase your question the way you phrased it, because I'm going to butcher it. Yeah, is there a time or a place for tough love? And my answer is, yes, there is. Typically when somebody's a victim, I'm usually trying to stage it up before, if they're a client, before I terminate. So I'll probably have some talk 2 or 3 times. 3 is like my maximum. And then at that point, I'm usually ending it. And if it's a friend, I'm usually saying, it doesn't really feel like you really want to do this. Like you don't really want to take action. Am I off? And then we explore it and then take it from there. Awesome. Any others before we end? I think we have to get our kids, right? Sorry about that. Carlton, would you mind closing us in prayer so we can get kids? And
our Father in heaven, we thank you that you know where we are all the time. yourself. We thank you that we are joined to the Christ wherever we go. We thank you that his compassion is infinite, his wisdom is beyond tracing out, and his power is inexhaustible. Lord, whom have we in heaven but you? We thank you for our time tonight, and we pray that by these times together we will grow in the wisdom and the grace that is in Christ. In his name we pray. Amen.
Amen.